all the new light sport aircraft to send on Sebring, all 70 of them. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Rob Finfrock, ANN Managing Editor, and our man on the scene at the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo in Sebring, Florida. Rob, are you dried out yet?
Dried out, yes I am, Paul, and quite honestly, it's been a long day,
well,
but it's been a fun day, too.
We should probably explain to listeners that I'm not talking about the beverages you had at dinner, I'm talking about the weather at Sebring.
Yes, that's exactly right, Paul. Kind of a rainy start to the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo here in Sebring, Florida, as it was last year as well, which was the first year I attended the event. Fortunately, the majority of the rain showers held off for most of the day. By mid-morning, the ceiling had lifted, the rain had stopped to only an occasional drizzle. It was a little windy for a lot of the planes, but still several demo flights were conducted throughout the day and exhibition flights, and I did notice that the crowds, not only were there a few more people here on the opening day than I saw last year, but there was also, I would say, a more varied mix between the younger crowd that the sport pilot category is hoping to attract, as well as the established pilots, the older pilots, that are lured to sport pilot and light sport aircraft on the promise of being able to fly without a third-class medical.
Well, you know, I remember last year when I was down there with you, thinking, you know, maybe I'd missed something and it was Senior Citizens Day. but it's encouraging to see the category attracting the other half of who is supposed to be there.
Now, well, and just as a real quick aside on that, Paul, because I made note of this in an article I did on the opening day last year, I noticed the major sponsor of the event, Ford Motor Company, once again, it is a major sponsor this year as well. There were no Grand Marquis full-size sedans catered to retirees at this year's event. Decidedly younger mix of vehicles hoping to attract a younger audience. Maybe somebody read that article in the halls of Dearborn. I don't know. But once again, further evidence that, yes, Sport Pilot ever so gradually is attracting a younger crowd.
Okay. Well, I think the big overarching story in the sport in the light sport aircraft category is just the sheer number of competitors. Flight Design has hung on to its ranking in the category pretty well. But they had a little work to do if they wanted to stay there, and it looks like they are serious about remaining a contender.
That's exactly right, Paul, and they have unveiled a flat-out beautiful airplane, the CTLS, which from the rear edge of the cabin doors forward exactly resembles a CTSW, at least to the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
From the doors back, however, it is an entirely new aircraft, and I gotta say, the CT, for good reason, has been the top-selling LSA in the U.S. market since the U.S. market came into existence in 2005.
Right.
Cessna has a little something to say about that. They've already sold more Skycatchers on their books than Flight Design has sold CTs throughout the United States in 2.5 years to market before the Skycatcher was introduced. But in the interest of achieving not only parity, but getting a little bit ahead of the Skycatcher, the folks at Flight Design, which is a German company, the aircraft itself is built in Eastern Europe, but they've done their homework, and they have certainly made a few what I would consider to be needed improvements to what was already an excellent aircraft. In particular, they have really focus their attention on developing a plane that is a little bit easier for a student pilot to handle. And most definitely, I think they're going to find in practice that they've done their job in that regard.
Well, now, I recall flying that airplane, and you'd flew it too. You've flown it actually quite a bit more than I have. You took some instruction in it. Let me ask you what needed to be improved, because what struck me was just some of the effects I would expect from a very light aircraft with a very light wing loading. What has made it easier to handle?
Well, the history of the CT is basically the reason why it's been a somewhat unusual fit in the sport pilot category as defined in the United States. The CT was designed to European microlight standards, and keep in mind that what we call a light sport aircraft here in the States is an entirely different animal in regards to general aviation in Europe. Essentially, and this is an oversimplification, but it's most apt and it's the quickest way to describe it, what we call light sport is essentially entry-level general aviation for most of Europe, Western and Eastern. As they've dealt for years with the exorbitant fuel prices that unfortunately we're starting to get a taste of here in the U.S. as well, the segment has been relegated to somewhat smaller aircraft, and the CT was especially catered to that market in that it is a very roomy two-place aircraft, and it's also a very slippery little plane. This is an aircraft that will true at an honest 120 knots, which is the upper limit of the top speed as defined in the light sport aircraft category. If anything, they've had to make modifications to slow the airplane down through different negative flap settings, for example, and other minor tweaks to the platform. It's a very slippery aircraft. It's a very quick aircraft in response, in roll, in pitch. There's been a slight issue, and I hate to call it an issue because the fact of the matter is there's a large number of CTs throughout the United States, more CTs than any other light sport aircraft. Proportionately, they have had a relatively a significant number of landing incidents, and most of those incidents are, matter of fact, all but one that comes to memory, is in regards to the way the main landing gear on the CTSW is set up. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, this is not a fragile aircraft by any stretch of the imagination. It is an aircraft, however, and I'm going to pick on students a little bit. I'm a student. We're all guilty of this at one time or another. It's an aircraft that is somewhat unforgiving of a hard landing in the SW configuration. Landing gear on the SW series is basically aluminum rods, and one of the designers from Flight Design in Germany, as he explained it to me today, those aluminum rods in the SW landing gear, they have no dampening effort whatsoever in the landing gear. Mm-hmm. You hit the mains hard in an SW, it's going to send you back up into the air. There's very little dampening to be had there. And that's something that on occasion has caused pilots difficulty because more often than not, it rebounds you into the air. You set yourself up for either a porpoise situation, in which case you're now coming down hard on the nose gear, which is an entirely different animal, or you're going to smack the main gear once again. And if you're not careful and if you don't time it exactly right, you run the risk of pancaking the plane right onto the runway.
Right.
Fortunately, this is an area that they have certainly addressed with the LS, the CTLS. The landing gear is no longer a straight aluminum rod. It is now a laminate composite structure that is much more forgiving. It has some dampening capability. As a matter of fact, it has a lot of dampening, not only relative to the SW, but actually throughout the line. Plus, it is a somewhat longer aircraft, and they've put that space to good use. It's extra cargo space in the cabin, which it's amazing how much room is behind the seats in the LS series. There's actually a dedicated baggage shelf. It is a substantial baggage shelf, and between the shelf and the baggage area that you'll find behind the cabin, you can store 110 pounds of cargo, which, to my knowledge, is far more than practically any other light sport aircraft can manage.
Wow.
And the CT series is also fairly light as far as usable load. The LS is going to be slightly heavier than the SW 770-pound empty weight rating. So you can realistically put two average, slightly heavier than average pilots with nearly full tanks and a weekend's worth of baggage in a CT. Not only will you wait out okay, but you'll actually have room to fit those bags in it as well. But that's just one part of the benefit of having that longer fuselage. The second aspect and how it relates to landing is it increases the length of the moment from the landing gear wheels to the base of the tail. The fact that that's longer, you have a more even spread of weight, and that is going to inherently smooth out most landing approaches, and it's going to create a situation where you're not putting the full force of the aircraft on the main gear. You're actually going to have the weight a little more spread out throughout the frame, and that's going to smooth out your landing in most situations. This has been, I would say, the one negative aspect of the current CT design, especially as it relates to flight training. Just by sheer basis of numbers, the CT was one of the most readily available light sport aircraft when the category first came into existence in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Through default, it became one of the top trainers in the United States as well. The aircraft wasn't really intended as a trainer. It was intended for experienced pilots.
Right.
Not that it isn't highly capable as a trainer, but one of the banes in that role has been nicely addressed with the CTLS. And once again, when push comes to shove, you want an airplane that looks good on the ramp. The CTSW is somewhat of a love it or hate it design. Some people think it looks like a really advanced aircraft. Others think it looks a little too cute.
Right.
That added length in the LS really matures the design. And honest to God, it gives it a fantastic ramp presence. It's a gorgeous aircraft to look at. It is beautifully engineered. The level of quality in this design, I would say, is second to none. And they've done a fantastic job with this airplane. I'm not sure if they're ever going to come close to the sales numbers that Cessna's claiming with the Skycatcher, but in most flight lines, they're going to give the Skycatcher a more than even run for its money when it comes to the flying experience.
Rob, you mentioned Cessna and Cirrus. They had some news at Sebring, too. I want to talk to you a little bit about that when we come back.
Sounds good, Paul.
Rob Finfrock is ANN's managing editor. He's in Sebring for the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo, and we'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack. Rob Finfrock is ANN's managing editor, and he's in Sebring, where the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo is underway in Florida. And he's telling us what he's seeing after the first day. Rob, we appreciate your being with us today. We talked about the CTLS being debuted by Flight Design, but the big guys are there. And the big guys are a much bigger deal this year because they've both announced for sure that they're entering the segment. Let's talk about the Cirrus SRS. They apparently are taking orders now.
That's correct, Paul. They're taking deposits. On Monday, Cirrus Design announced that they will be taking $5,000 refundable deposits on the SRS to hold a place in line when they debut the plane, which is still expected to be sometime in 2009. The aircraft is on display. It's essentially the same aircraft that was on display at Oshkosh last year. They haven't shown the Cirrus-sized model as of yet. That was CEO Alan Klapmeyer's somewhat tongue-in-cheek term for what they'd have to do to the basis for the SRS, which is actually another German aircraft called the FK Polaris. That's been in the Microlight segment for several years. They're bringing the design over here as a Cirrus simply because the Polaris shares many of the traits of the larger SR series of Cirrus aircraft. It is an all-composite airframe. The aircraft can be equipped with a glass panel. The display mule, for lack of a better term, has a mixed panel of Dynon and other glass manufacturers. I would guess that they're evaluating different glass panel designs for the final product. There are a few aspects of the design that will have to be altered for LSA. I touched on this in the first segment.
Yeah, you'll have to slow it down. That's something that comes hard for Cirrus engineers.
That's exactly right. Their first instinct is to speed things up. But like the CT design, they're going to have to tweak it to bring it under the 120 knot maximum for LSA. To do that, they're going to add cabin steps, which is something that the Polaris needed. It's a little difficult to step on the wing. It's a low wing, but it sits relatively high off the ground.
Right.
They're also going to do slight alterations to the airframe. And one of the most significant advancements to the design, you can get the Polaris with a ballistic parachute system, but Cirrus is going to want to take a look at that, too, to adapt it to be in line with the true cap system that's in the SR series. So there's still some work to be done on this airplane, but there's no doubt that Cirrus does intend to bring the SRS to market. They still haven't quoted a final price, which is why those deposits at this point are refundable. The company didn't say why that is. You can certainly speculate. One of the reasons, no doubt, I would imagine Cirrus is hoping that the dollar to euro rate evens out a little bit in the near future. Let's face it, this is an aircraft that's coming from Europe. It's going to be priced in euros converted to dollars. And I would imagine the sticker price is somewhat nebulous at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But no doubt there is definite interest in this aircraft, and I'm sure Cirrus is going to walk away with a decent amount of orders by the end of Sebring on Sunday.
Well, yeah, and by the time they get that in the lineup and the jet, they will have us covered from beginner to expert in terms of the entire product line. Let's talk about Cessna just a little bit. The Skycatcher has been making all kinds of news, but not all of it the kind Cessna would like to have us focus on lately. And they seem to be trying to drop hints now, or at least keep us posted on the development of this thing as it proceeds towards introduction date.
Well, first off, let's touch on that China issue. That's become the talk of the not only the light sport community, but the general aviation and the good old nationalist community over
the
last month.
Yeah, and speaking of deposits and refunds.
Well, Cessna officials aren't commenting on that, but one of their officials told me today that, according to him, the traffic going through the Cessna booth, which incidentally is front and center as you walk in the gates at Sebring, it displaced the Ford display, oddly enough.
Mm.
As you walk in, there were crowds all over the Skycatcher display today, and according to this Cessna official, he said that, quote, they have had no complaints from the people that have come through their booth in regards to the China decision. He went even further and said that he believes that the people that were most outspoken with the China decision were something of a fringe minority. That could be. I'm not entirely sure if that minority, though, doesn't have some teeth to it. Mm-hmm. And from what we've heard, again, there are people that are flat out unhappy with this decision. Again, I've kind of played both sides of this issue in between what we've talked about on the Aerocast versus what I've written on the site. I'm trying to understand both issues.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I agree it comes down to a matter of economics, and Cessna is trying to produce a very advanced aircraft for the least amount of money for sale possible. The only way, unfortunate as it may be for many, to do that would be to build the plane in China. So from a purely economic standpoint, Cessna's probably made the right call. And over time, I think the market is going to slowly start to come around to that. The harder-edged elements of the protest community may never come fully around to Cessna's line of thinking, but the majority of the market is eager for a Cessna light sport aircraft, and when push comes to shove, they're probably not going to worry too much about where the plane is ultimately produced.
Well, you know, and when I read comments on an internet blog from people who say, oh yeah, well then I'll never buy one, I have to think, you know, I've become a little cynical. But you and I have worked around the internet to know that there's an awful lot of 13-year-olds who are sitting back at their keyboards typing that, who are not going to buy one if it's made in New Jersey. And that just, I find that whole thing a little bit amusing. But, you know, the other thing that's overlooked in this whole debate is it's not just a matter of what price they can bring it to market at. It's that it has to be, there has to be enough profit margin in it to make it pencil out not only for Textron or a company like Textron, but also for the Cessna pilot centers. And face it, with over 60 aircraft on display in this segment, they're going to be, you know, 2/3 of them are going to disappear in a few years. And Cessna certainly doesn't want to bring out something that's going to be in that category.
Well, Cessna won't, flat out. I would say, short of a significant national action involving China, there's no way that this plane isn't going to come onto the market and at least be a measured success. I would bet money on this being the top-selling light sport aircraft the moment its wheels hit the pavement. Or let's clarify that a little bit, because technically it already is the top-selling LSA. Cessna's claiming very close to 1,000 orders on the Skycatcher. I heard two Cessna salesmen today. One said they were over 1,000. One said they were just under. That's somewhat significant because the base price grows by $2,000 once they surmount 1,000. So I am curious to hear what that final number is. If they're not at 1,000 now, they might very well be by the time Sebring ends.
Well, you know, Rob, during the calendar year 2007, the U.S. dollar declined versus the euro by 12% on international currency markets. To me, that says that an awful lot of these planes that are coming in from Eastern Europe are going to have trouble penciling out, even if they did a year ago.
That's quite possible, Paul. And something that we were discussing tonight over dinner is the fact that last year we were looking at all the entrants to the category, and we were making private predictions on, okay, we won't see them this next year, we won't see this particular company or aircraft. And to a degree, that's true. What's still happening, however, is that other manufacturers have stepped up and come into the market with new aircraft, and they are on display here. And don't get me wrong, competition is good, availability is a wonderful thing. I still maintain, and I'm, you know, talk about being cynical, I still maintain that this market is somewhat glutted right now.
Right.
I think right now the market accepts that just because there isn't a dominant seller such as a Cessna or a Cirrus in this market. When either of those companies come on board and start delivering planes in bulk, we're going to have to see some attrition in the market. And what is a currently over 70 plane market now,
right,
I can't see not going down to 20 to 25 over the next 3 years as Cessna and Cirrus come on board. And don't get me wrong, those two companies will certainly be within those 25.
Rob, I appreciate your perspective and insight and your being there, and for your taking a few minutes out in your palatial hotel room to talk to us about Sebring.
Here in lovely Avon Lake, Florida. Paul, thank you.
Rob Finfrock is our managing editor, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Have a clear and unlimited day.